Definitely recording that. Okay. Someone left the phone up here?
Yeah, that would be mine.
Okay. Making sure. James Alcoholic.
Hey, James!
And thanks, Mark, for asking me. It's kind of funny that I'm speaking tonight. I was asked to take the coffee home with me last week, and that forced me to come here like at 6 o'clock to meet Joe and Mark. And I really wanted, I was supposed to go on this work trip. I should be in North Carolina right now. And I was like, well, I got this freaking coffee thing in my house, and I'm trying to figure out with this guy on the phone, like, how am I going to, like, should I meet him Wednesday night and just drop off the coffee and just pawn it off on someone else? And so I just didn't feel like driving 9 hours, so I stayed here, and coincidentally, I got asked to speak. So I guess when someone asks you to put an urn of coffee, take it home with you, so, and then you end up speaking. So service keeps you sober. So thanks, Joe, for letting me do that, and Marcelo, I'm going to pass it off to you. So, welcome to the new guys. Welcome to my friend from Columbia. Glad you're here. My sobriety date is June 18th, 2008. I have a sponsor and Tampa Bay Young People's Group, Portico location is my home group. And let me move this up here. And yeah, I was just thinking, you know, like, I don't think I'm going to give, like, your traditional talk right now, because I've just been thinking about a lot of things. So just about personal development and growth in this past year. And I will talk a little bit about what it's like. And, you know, I like to keep what it's like short, because whenever I talk about too much of what it's like, next thing you know, I don't have enough time to talk about, you know, 8 years of experience. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, people usually try to scramble and fit in 5 minutes, you know. So what it was like was two main instances, one being Mexico, Tijuana, with the family. I was 18 years old, drinking age there is 18, wound up in a strip club, and I was 18 and was like seeing the new world for the first time, and was there, and it was really awkward. It was just me and a bunch of guys and one girl, and so I wanted to leave, and then they didn't want me to leave. And like the guys, like they told me, like they got them away. They said, "You can't leave." And if anyone's ever seen the movie A Bronx Tale, it was like that when like the bikers storming that bar and all the Italian guys were like, "No," and like they beat the crap out of them. And but it wasn't like that. But they told me I couldn't leave. And so it was like an argument ensued with me and this Mexican bouncer. And basically, you know, got myself out of that one, you know, and. And then I proceeded to get detained at the Mexican border for, I don't know if it was possession or whatever you consider it, but they detained me in front of my mom for trying to bring paraphernalia, which I didn't think was a big deal, across the border. But it got me put on a watch list, which is a real thing. I am on a watch list. And as I found out, I'll talk about that later in my sobriety. And so, yeah. I mean, just the whole experience, you know, I'm there, my mom's crying, the guy took me out of line, anything to declare, of course I have nothing to declare, and, you know, and I get detained in Mexico, I take my driver's license, there's a bunch of crazy bugs up here, by the way, I get detained in Mexico, and they take all my information down, they let me go across the border, and I just, you know, run across as fast as I can, because I don't want them to have second thoughts and then keep me down there, and, you know, get myself out of that again. Another instance where I'm able to escape out of it, you know? Second instance, I mean, if you drink like I do and, you know, party like I do, drugs entailed, we always find people that are just like us. We have like a radar to find scumbags. We're like, beep, 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 beep. And we're like, oh, okay, there they are, okay. So I'm in Hawaii and I find scumbags and they're selling drugs on the corner, hang out with them. And hang out with them, and people probably laugh at my story. And you know, so I think I'm gonna go party with these guys, and they're Samoans. And next, you know, they half robbed me. They robbed me, but they didn't get my money. They got my drugs, and so they beat the crap out of me. And reason why I tell that story isn't to like tell the story about like, yeah, I got beat up by 300-pound Samoan dudes and, you know, had a dislocated jaw and couldn't hear in my right ear for about a month, which sucked. But the reason why I tell it was when I was getting punched, like, it hurt. Like, it was like everything was like, whoa, like Rikishi, full-on Rikishi, like, kind of like, and, yeah. And so, like, they're punching me, but I remember, like, I had too much pride to yell for help. That was, like I can laugh at it now, but, like, that's sad. Like, I remember watching people walk by, I'm in, like, this alleyway, and they're, like, holding me, like, there's, like, two guys, and this one dude's like, burr, 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 and he's just, like, taking, like, just shots on my face, and obviously it really freaking hurt. But I remember, like, watching people walk by, and it's like, dude, if you just yelled out for help, they probably would, like, come to your rescue, and I'm like, can't do it. And, like, I'm still trying to, like, squeeze out, and they're, like, trying to, like, go in my pockets. And I had a bunch of money on me. I, like, had saved up, like, from this job, and I was, like, and I had brought drugs on the plane with me. That was a whole nother story. And, you know, so I'd saved up for this job, for this trip, because my parents, like, took a alcoholic and drug addict in its midst, and they don't like talking about this story. Like, I brought up the other day, and they're like, we don't want to talk about it still. Because they called the treatment center from Hawaii, and it was, like, their wedding anniversary. Like, so selfish. And, yeah, so they, luckily this guy came to my rescue, and, you know, of course I, you know, ran away, and of course I had to elaborate the story to my parents that all my money got stolen. $1,000 got taken from me. I need $1,000. And they're like, well, what's going on? And the whole story was, is more to that. The story was, is I tried to bring a car tire on an elevator. I went in an ABC store, and I went in and I ran out real quick, and I stole the airplane bottles that they sell, and the 151, and I drank a bunch of them, and so then I was smashed, and I was like this hotel, a swanky part of Waikiki, and I would probably say Wachula, it's not swanky, and swanky part of Waikiki, and you know, I'm trying to bring this car tire on an elevator, and the security guard's like, dude, what are you doing, man? And then I proceeded to destroy basically a whole floor of the hotel. Pots, vases, paintings, everything destroyed. And, you know, so I go in the hotel room and I explain the story to my parents. Of course, I had to wake them up. It's like 3 a.m. You know, I got to make a bunch of noise. And, you know, and just crazy, like, loudness. And so, obviously, the cops get called. And I never thought about it until I told my story. I forget where I told my story recently, but I never thought about it. But my parents didn't snitch me out when the cops came. They were like, has your son been here all night long? And I never thought about that. I never put the two and two together. But my mom, she didn't rat me out. She could have been like, yeah, he was out there partying. He said he got robbed. You know, like, and I was trashed, mind you. And they're like, well, we've been getting noise complaints. And we got people saying that. And I looked down the hallway, and just, it was like a dinosaur had walked through there. It was like, you know, like, dirt, you know, pot upside down, painting, all this stuff. And, yeah, and so that was how I ended up in treatment the first time. When I came back from that trip, I woke up to a cop, actually, in my living room. I walked downstairs for breakfast, and there was the police in the kitchen. My parents were outside talking with another cop, and the cop was like, you got two choices, you know, leave or go to treatment. And so I had the police escort me to treatment. I don't know why they do that. I live in a small town, so I guess they had nothing else better to do. They're probably like, that's the only thing I can think of. You know what I mean? Like, they rode in front of me, and, you know, I had a history of violence toward my parents. Which I later got served a PFA, a protection from abuse, while I was in treatment. So yeah, I did that, and that's how I first discovered Florida, and I'm from Pennsylvania. But, you know, I just think back to my drinking, and like everything that I did in my drinking went against like every moral fiber that I was ever taught. And I think so many people can relate to that. It's like, you know, we weren't taught to steal. I'm an Eagle Scout. I was definitely not taught to steal from people. But yet, that's what I did on a daily. And I would just scheme on different types of ways. Like, how could I, what was the biggest scheme that I still think about was how they could take a a spark plug, and if you put it in water and you threw it against the car's window, it could actually make the car window spider crack, but it wouldn't set off the alarm. And so that was the biggest scheme. Like, and so, you know, and that way you could steal from people's cars and you just destroyed their window. And it was so stupid, man. Like, when I was in treatment, the police were looking for a laptop that I was involved with, but I didn't have in my possession. And, you know, and that was, the laptop had a LoJack in it, and they traced it to where my buddy was at. And, of course, he, you know, said that I stole it, which wasn't true. I was there when it was stolen, so I guess it was kind of true. One third stole it. There's three of us, and it was a electronics car. So, but yeah, no. So, tried to get sober the first time, and I got sober in when I flew right from treatment to Boca Raton, and lived in a halfway house there. It was pretty wild. Not much happened there. I worked at Old Navy. I rode the bus a lot. I have a history of not liking to ride buses either. I don't like riding buses, so I generally walk and protest them silently. And so I, you know, did that, and I end up drinking. It's so funny, though, like, how we can lie to ourselves. Like, we lie to ourselves probably more than we lie to other people. And, but I, like, lied to myself. When I drank again, I drank with this old dude that I worked for, and we did, like, just home remodeling. I mean, I think he was, like, a scumbag also, because he didn't have much going on. So it was perfect that I worked for him. And, like, he'd be like, dude, we got to return this stuff to Home Depot so I can pay you today. And I'm like, okay. And, like, something like that. And so he was like, man, you want a drink? And he knew that, like, he found me from the halfway house next door. Like, and I was like, no, man, you know I'm in AA. And he was like, all right. He's like, well, if you want to hang out for an extra hour, dude, I'll pay you for the hour if you want to hang out while I just drink. So I guess he was like, paid me an extra like 10 or 15 bucks or I made at that time to hang out. And he just drank and he's like, all right, you can go home. And I'm like, all right. And so the next day he asked me the same thing again. And I was like, yeah, of course I drink. And so I drank with this dude. But it's so funny, like the perception, like when I went back, like people were like, dude, something's off, man. Did you drink again? And I was like, how do they know? I was like, dude, it was me and this girl on the beach, and we drank together. When really, it was me and this old dude in this living room. And then it, like, even, like, elaborated more. It was like, then it, like, the lie elaborated into, I think it ended up eventually being, like, me, and it was a sunset, and, you know, I drank with this girl, and then we made love and all this stuff. And, like, it just, like, manifested itself, and, like, I'm like, the truth is, I drank with this freaking old dude that was a weirdo, and so that set me off. But you know, alcohol is kind of baffling. You know, I couldn't be honest with my friends. My buddies used to actually bring me white chips because I stopped going to meetings in the halfway house, and they like, and I was afraid if I drank again that my parents wouldn't let me come back home. So I stayed sober, and I, as soon as I was able to come back home, I was off to the races. And long story short, I wound up leaving my car, not a smart move on my part, leaving my car in my buddy's house, and we ended up in Trenton, New Jersey. And I've lost track of time, drinking, doing drugs out there. And you know, we were in a very, very, the hood. We were in the hood. Like nothing I've ever seen before. Like, it was like, the only way I can put it is the only people that went in that neighborhood lived in that neighborhood, or they were buying drugs basically. And they would check cars. And I was with my buddy's girlfriend's brother, who was a Puerto Rican guy, and she was Puerto Rican as well. And I remember the highlight was we were waiting for so-and-so to get home from prison because he had, you know, finally was getting released after like X amount of years for hurting someone. And that was like the big party that we're looking forward to. And it's just so much stuff I think about. It's so much different in my life. Like, I don't say any of that stuff to brag. I just say it's like so much different. The guy I stayed with got indicted for multiple homicides, and like it was insane. I mean, just the insanity of it. Like I don't think about it until I tell my story. Like the insanity of it, like hiding drugs in babies' underwear. You know, I remember that like some guy came over to buy pot, and then he's like, and a guy came over to buy like a pound of pot, and it was in the baby's diaper. Like, and wrapped up in cellophane. And it's like stuff like that, and it's just like not normal, you know. But that's the hood though, so it's not normal. But anyways, so yeah, my parents thought I was missing. I came back, I had nowhere to live, and it's really funny, like revelations of like how I see my past. My last drink I ever took was on June 18th 2008, and it was on a bird dock that I helped build as a Boy Scout, Eagle Scout project for someone. So it was almost like, you know, at one point there was like this innocence of like when I was doing good for society. I'm building a bird watching dock that's like, it's really incredible. It's like built over top of this beaver dam area on the water. And here I am and I'm drinking, here I am like 6 years later and I'm drinking 40s at 8 a.m., you know? And I'm 2 40s in, and I cannot feel the effects produced by alcohol. And, you know, obviously I wasn't quoting big book passages then, but, like, I was like, dude, what's going on? I'm drinking, I'm smoking, and when I drink, I'm, like, I need some smoke to calm me down. And when I smoke, I'm, like, you know, paranoid. And it was just, like, this world that I didn't want to live in, you know? And so I prayed with my friend's mom that morning, and then I went to rehab, the same rehab I had been in prior, and got sober. And then they shipped me off to a partial program. I was in, I think it's called Williamsport, where the Little League World Series is at. That's the town where I went to a partial program, and it was really interesting there. It actually was like, it was kind of like a goof up on my insurance that I ended up there, because my bed had opened up for the halfway house. It wasn't a halfway house. It was a halfway house, but it was like a government program where, you know, I could stay there, and they didn't want me to work. But my bed had opened up, but I was already sent on my way to Williamsport, and it was like a 4 or 5 hour ride. So they were like, I know that because my counselor is a good friend of mine now, and he was like, yeah, dude, your bed opened up like when you left. And like, so I ended up in Williamsport in a prison reentry program with a bunch of dudes that were getting sober before they went into prison. And so there I am. And I remember when I get there, I'm like, something seemed off, because the guy was like, anyone walks off this porch, I'm calling your PO. And I'm like, I don't have a PO. And he's like, all right, then you're going to live in Williamsport. And I'm like, I don't want to live in Williamsport. Dude, they're like, literally, like, there is nothing there. It's like a hood and like Little League baseball and a bunch of kids then hang out there. And sketchy. Like, it was so weird. Like, deer would walk through town. Like, I grew up with that, but deer would walk through, like, the hood, and they'd be like, oh, get that deer out of here. And, like, and it was, yeah. So it was like that. And we used to have to walk to meetings, like, single file. It was so, dude, I laugh at it now, and we all had chores, and if we didn't do our chore, like, we had this meeting where people would call each other out, and be like, you didn't clean the dishes thoroughly, and then, like, all this stuff, like, and I remember my roommate, like, my roommate was, like, trying to, like, he was like, yeah, I just can't wait to get out of prison so I can start smoking crack again, and I'm like, dude, this is crazy. I'm like, I can't wait to leave here so I can go to my halfway house that I'm supposed to be at. So I was there for 3.5 weeks. Finally, my bed opened up. But it was like this process, because they had to drive someone out to pick me up. It wasn't like, and so a van driver came, picked me up from the halfway house that I was going to go to. And I went to this place called the Hardwood House. And I don't consider it a halfway house, because nothing about it was like a house. Nothing about it was halfway. I had to get buzzed in, and they had like cameras out front. And so this is before people vaped. So cigarettes were still cool. Newport 100s. And so I would, you know, I got there, and, you know, I tell this like I tell every new guy, you know, your chances of staying sober when you get out of treatment and you go to a meeting that night, drastically increase if you go to a meeting that night. And I went to a meeting that night, and I didn't have to really, but I wanted to. And I met up with this guy, Joe. His name is, there's somebody nicknames in AA, Dr. Joe, but really he was a chiropractor. So however that works doctor-wise. But they just called him Dr. Joe, you know, because he was close to being a medicine thing. So Dr. Joe would pick me up in his old Oldsmobile, and he was the first guy that gave me a ride to meet, and I'm grateful for him. And because I didn't have a car, and like I told you before, I protest the bus company. So I would walk to meetings, mainly because I didn't have any money. And I would walk an hour to a meeting, and I realized when I say that, I sound probably like someone's dad. Back in my day, we used to walk to meetings, and I would walk to meetings, though. And along the way, you know, guys like this one old-timer guy, he would come to our halfway house thing, state program, and he would eat our food, and he would drop off clothes and then hang out with us. And then he'd read our newspaper and hang out with us. And then we would all go in his, he had one of those Dodge Caliber or Dodge Cobalt, like a somewhat, not an SUV, but it could fit like, we fit like 8 to 10 in there. You know, if we could have rode in the trunk, we would have. And so he would just put people in there. We'd sit on each other's laps and stuff like that. And that's how I got to, you know, meet girls and guys. And so, yeah, we would go to meetings like that, and he would require us to share at the meeting if we were going to get a ride. And so it was like literally like, I'm James, I'm an alcoholic. Jamie made me share, so thanks, Jamie. And he'd be like. And so that's how I got involved, you know, like, and I'm really like, it's, I'm really grateful for those guys. They, you know, they did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Along the way, I got a sponsor, I think at 30 days, because I'd already been in this program. So I got a sponsor right away. That sponsor got me in service. That sponsor said, you know, all right, we're gonna clean the ashtrays. We smoked at my home group. That's all we did. We just smoked and talked shit and drink coffee. And so I'd clean the ashtrays, and then I tell the story all the time. I got the highest position you can get in AA, and that's making the coffee. It's very important. And I made a thing way bigger than that. The thing was like this and like this, and it's one of those things like the top thing you just shovel. Like it's like a shovel you just put in there. And I filled it to the top with coffee. And I remember like this dude in the meeting was drinking it, and he's like, oh, it's disgusting. And then like, and then he took it a step further, and he shared about it. And my sponsor's like, we didn't come here for the coffee. We came here for spirituality. And then, I was never allowed to make coffee again. And that's still how I make my coffee, honestly. But I like it strong. That coffee right there is very strong. And so I got put on vacuuming the floors. We vacuumed the floors. We painted the walls in the AA room. And there was so much cigarette smoke that we like took it like 3 shades lighter after we cleaned the walls. I loved it, dude. I don't like smoking meetings now, but like I needed every single bit of that for humility when I was brand new. Like I love when new guys tell me now, well, I can't make it to the meeting. It's like, you know, 10 minutes from my house. And I was like, dude, I used to walk an hour, you know, through blizzards, you know, and wars. So I got sober. I turned 21. I got sober at 20. I turned 21 in Akron, Ohio during Founders Day. That was freaking incredible. We rented a 16-passenger van, and we went out there as a crew. It was amazing. You know, a lot of those people are still sober, and a lot of them are still friends with today. And, you know, I never really got involved with the steps until I was almost ready to kill myself in AA. And that happened, and I got involved with the steps because I was like, dude, I need to do something. I need to make a change in my life. And so I got involved with the steps. I did my 4-step at what's called International Convention. If you don't know what that is every 5 years on the, however they put that, 75-year, 80-year mark, we have a convention to celebrate Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's every 5 years. So I think the next one's going to be in 3 years now. And this one was in Atlanta, and I went to that, and I sat there, and I put on the Eminem song, I'm Not Afraid, and I did my 4-step, I'm not afraid, and all that. And did that, and woke up, my sponsor and I, we did the fifth step. I came down to visit Fort Myers to make my amends, made amends to my parents. That was awesome, and I decided I wanted to move down here, and you know, I'm going to speed up a lot because I really want to talk about this last year, and decided to come down here. I moved down here. I got a job in the field that I thought I was going to do, like the end-all be-all of what my limitations could be. I hated every minute of that job. I went to school for that, and I didn't want to do that, and so I switched. Did something I had no idea what I was going to do. Like any alcoholic, I went in head first and didn't listen to anyone. And I think like a lot of us do, mainly with relationships. And did that and just was living, you know, dirty. There was just so much chaos. I just spoke the I think last week in Fort Myers, and I talked about it, and it's like my life today is so much serene and peace. Like I love it. I love it. Don't disturb me with drama. I don't care about your drama. Like I really don't. Like it's so serene. I was sleeping with a girl that was actively using heroin, and you know, the last day that I moved from Philly, I had to return a bunch of her stuff, and I was like, how do I get this girl out of my life? Because it was like, you know, I felt so horrible about what I was doing and being sober, and you know, and she was a mess. I went to go see her, and she had done a bunch of heroin, and she had, you know, she told me she did an 8-ball, and she did a bunch of heroin, and she had drinking, and she's like, dude, I don't know what to do, and I was like, she's like, I think I'm peaking, but I think I'm coming down. And she was like, wasted. And I was like, she was like, what do I do? I need you to help me. You're sober. And I was like, you need to go to a hospital. What do you need to do? You need to call 911. I don't know. And I was the next day I was leaving to Florida. And, D.C., and then hop on the auto train, hang out with my D.C. friends there. And I got in my car, and probably I still will say this is the scariest moment of my sobriety. I got in my car, and in my city in Philadelphia, we have what's called the Jump Out Boys, and they come, and they rode this van or SUV rode down the street, and all these dudes hopped out with ski masks, and they were in my car within no time. They thought I was selling drugs, and I guess they were watching that neighborhood. And the only way I talked myself out of that, long story short, was I asked him if I could go in my wallet. I went in my wallet, the guy said yeah, and it was crazy. Like, they were in my back seat, they were searching through everything. It was insane, and they all had ski masks on, so it was all really, like, nerve-wracking. And I just showed them my AA medallion, and then they're like, oh, you're sober, and then they just took off. That's the honest truth. That is, like, it doesn't work with traffic tickets, but it worked in that scenario. And, but still, you know, I felt like such a piece of crap. I remember calling my friends crying, saying that I couldn't do this anymore. And then I remember just like being in the shower, just asking God, like, why am I, you know, still living so dirty? And, you know, so here I am in Florida, embarked on doing my own thing in business, and it's been up and down. And, you know, I'm actually going back to school this summer. I'm finishing, I think I'm only a few classes away from finishing my AA degree, which is kind of cool. And, you know, but it hasn't been easy. You know, I talk about the real stuff because it's like, I'm not going to stand up here and say that, like, oh, yeah, I was this Mr. Serenity guy, and I didn't sleep with new girls, and I didn't do all this crazy shit. I did all that, you know? And along the way, I put down the bottle, and I put down the bottle, and for so many years, I developed a porn addiction and a sex addiction that caused me to get sober in another fellowship. And I just had 9 months in there, and something I never thought I'd do. You know, I was destroying my own life, and you know, I was the only person that knew about it. And I share about that just, you know, because I know that other people have, you know, called me and asked me for help, and that's why I just share about that. And so that's cool. So I work in the steps in that fellowship and in this fellowship, and it's just been a whole year of growth. And I'll be honest with you, this past year has probably been, I'm coming up on an anniversary of 9 years in June, and it's been the hardest year of my sobriety, I'm not going to lie. You know, I I got a very good friend of mine back in my life who I'm very grateful for, one of my best friends in Philadelphia, and that has probably been one of the highlights. You know, and he's been helping me with business, which has been incredible. I'm very blessed to have him. And but I realized that, you know, like, the best I feel is when I am praying and meditating daily. You know, I started doing that, I'll be honest with you, I started doing that daily in a journal that I've been doing for the past 7 days, and it's been the best 7 days I've felt. And I made a commitment that I'm going to do it for 30 days, and then I'm going to recommit to do it again. And so, started doing that, but like I said, man, this whole year has been, it's been insane. It's been very, very hard. You know, I literally withdrew off something that I didn't think you could withdraw off of. And that wasn't easy. But, you know, I've been open and honest with people. The more I talk about, you know, the monsters in my closet or stuff that happens, it's like, dude, when we get sober, it doesn't mean we're going to be these, like, you know, all-time spiritual human beings. And that's why I'm like, you know, if you're going to look up to anyone in AA, look up to God, you know, because he's in the rooms. I mean, we're fallible. And, you know, so it's been incredible. I switched sponsors. That was a unique and amazing experience. You know, my AA life, I've had to adjust. You know, I've been extra busy. Like I said, you know, I did not expect to be up here. I thought I was going to be on my North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia trip that I was supposed to be doing. All work. And instead, I'm here, and this is probably where I'm meant to be, you know. I'm also, I've got a few minutes left, and I got to talk about, you know, what I'm involved with also. Who else is here? Chris is here, and Jesse, and am I missing one? We were all part of Ficky Pop, host committee. If I missed someone, let me know. And Annie, I apologize. I was looking for you. I knew you were sitting up front earlier. Annie as well. We all were a part of Ficky Paw host committee when it was in Tampa. And, you know, I rested after a year of that, and I was like, dude, I need something. Give me service, you know? And I jumped in with these guys in St. Pete for Circuit Paw, the St. Eastern Regional Conference of Young People in St. Pete at the Hilton Bayfront, June 1st through the 4th. Plug, and jumped in with those guys after they won. I like joining host committees. I don't like bidding, and but I take minimal positions. I don't take like the chair. I'm not that selfish. I'm like, dude, whatever's left over, let me be of service. But thanks for bidding. And I jumped in with those guys, and man, like, it's got me back involved with AA more than ever on a service level that is different and unique that I'm not used to. And it's awesome. You know, I'm the volunteer chair coordinator thing. And, you know, so it gets me with people that want to be of service like myself. And which is incredible, you know, and that's where I need to be. And so it's been a different way for me to get involved in service. We got an event tomorrow, Circuit Prom. That's going on tomorrow. If you're looking for something to do in young people stuff, Circuit Prom is going on in Seminole. And, you know, that's been cool. You know, it's got me back involved with YPA. I didn't think I'd ever do it again, and I am. And it's allowed me to be of service. You know, I've just been doing a lot of things different. You know, I'm not, you know, wasting. You know, what's it say? We don't tire so easily because we're not burning up energy foolishly. And you know, now it's like I'm looking for meaningful relationships. And now the relationships I'm looking for are that are meaningful are friendships, you know, new people in AA I'm going to meet, and not selfishly, like, what can I gain out of this? Because they're even sober, there always was, like, an ulterior motive. And now it's just like, let me just give of myself. And I'm not perfect. Like I said, I'm a human being. But it's pretty awesome. It's a pretty awesome feeling. I'm reconnected with God more than ever. My family just moved, not moved, they just are traveling back up the eastern coast of Pennsylvania. There's snowbirds down here, and I spent so much time with them, which is awesome, you know, and that's what AA's done for me. It's given me the relationship with my family back. That's kind of why I wasn't here so many weeks in a row. I was going down there to spend time with them, because when they go back, I don't see them for 6 months. And so I went down there for Easter. I went to church twice in one day, and I went there twice in one day. That's worth repeating. And you know, and it's just it's awesome, you know, just to show up. And I don't even consider it like getting back in your family's life. I don't consider that, like, people say, like, a living amends, and I just consider it just being a son and a family. You know, I don't think, you know, we deserve any special awards, you know, for showing up in our family's life after we caused so much chaos. My sponsor had me doing a bunch of stuff. My sponsor, Todd, at the time, had me doing a bunch of stuff where I would show up and just make dinner, take the trash out without asking. And I did that for every single holiday that they were here. And I showed up and I did that and I didn't ask. And that's when they started noticing, like, that, like, I was not being selfish anymore. I wasn't taking their car, hanging out with a bunch of girls till 4 a.m. sober, and then returning it on empty. My mom would wake up to go to the gym at 7 a.m. while I'm still sleeping, and she'd be like, why is my car have no gas in it? Because I was selfish, and I was a taker. And it's not like that anymore. It's the complete opposite. You know, I do everything with them. I love my family. And so, yeah, hopefully I told the truth to the fullest, Your Honor, and hopefully I did good. Thanks for asking me last minute to speak, and thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, James. And thank you guys for sharing your stories with us. Remember that we do record our speakers here.